It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, our ECU Radford preview. Our baseball is here. Today is the day at 2 o'clock this afternoon as Alec Burleson gets that baseball, and he'll be throwing out the first pitch. It'll be at 2 o'clock, a little bit after that. And, of course, with the weather going on, they had to move up. It's going to be a doubleheader. We hope that they can get the second game in tonight. The second and third game of the series, to be determined. We don't know yet. Typically, it's about 45 minutes after the first game. We'll see how that plays out. You know, North Carolina weather, it could change. If you don't like it, it can change at any time. But we're so excited. I have butterflies. I don't know about you guys listening right now, but it's going to be a great, great series. Congratulations to Coach Cliff Godwin. Another great season I know is ahead. We'll say that ahead of time. And the preseason polls mean nothing right now. This is down to when the rubber meets the road when you have the first game. The anticipation has been there. The excitement's been there for 2019, coming off of that regional last year. I know it was a disappointment, but hosting a regional was certainly a big deal. And they fell short, disappointing, but it's good that it's a disappointment because that means it's a really big deal, and they know they could have done more. This junior class is going to be, with Bryant, Packard, and company, is going to be tremendous. I think they have a super regional, at least in their future. We'll have to, hopefully, be nice to even host a regional and a super regional, but it's literally very early, being February 15th. It's a long season. Baseball, definitely of all college sports, is a marathon and not a sprint, so we'll have to wait and see how things go. And I want to get your thoughts on everything, Kyle.
Excited for opening weekend for the 2019 baseball season. We have Radford in town, and you look at this series, and it's a series you think the Pirates should sweep on paper, but you never know with baseball. You get a pitcher out there, and he gets a hot hand. He could shut everybody down, or if your bats just ain't hitting that day. But hopefully, we'll get a sweep this weekend. It'll be interesting to see. High expectations this year. You know, everybody has Omaha on the mind. And, it'll be interesting to see how the season plays out. If we get in position, hopefully to host a regional and maybe be in position to win that and then host a super. But if you look at this weekend against, Radford, you got, Alec Burleson, starting, Friday. Well, I guess, we're playing two Friday. We got, Alec starting game one and then Jake Agnew starting game two. So, it'd be nice to get off to a 2-0 start. Who the hell knows when we're going to play game three with the weather like it is. It looks like the chance of rain Friday night. So hopefully we'll get game one and game two in before the game, before the rain gets here. And then game three, looking at the forecast, it didn't look like during the day Saturday there's going to be a chance. Saturday night looks like we may get a chance to play it, or either Sunday early afternoon, one of the two. I'd go ahead and play Saturday night if it was possible. But that's not my call. It'll be interesting to see, Brickhouse and, all the guys Bryant Packard and Trey Bitton and everybody just to see how they come out swinging the bats, Brady Lloyd. It's a long season. And, certainly the Radford series is one that, like I said before, we need to sweep, and it's exciting. A lot of expectations, and will this be the year we make it to Omaha? Time will tell. And, once this thing gets cranked up, baseball just keeps going. There's with weekend series, you play three every weekend, then you have your midweek games. And once it gets going, you play a bunch of games in a hurry. So it's exciting. Get fired up for baseball, and you don't want to jinx them, but hell, you might as well say it because that's the goal. The goal is Omaha, and will this be the year we get there? Bubba, what do you think?
Opening day is finally here. So much excitement and build up. That's always the case with ECU baseball. And with the expectations this year, coming off hosting a regional a season ago and then the top 15 rankings for this year's club, Pirate Nation just can't wait to get out to Clark LeClaire Stadium. And it's going to be nice Friday to get things underway with the Radford Highlanders. Taking a look at this series between ECU and Radford, these programs have met 22 times down through the years. The last was back in 2007, the second year of the Billy Godwin era. ECU holds a 19-3 advantage in the all-time series. And in that last meeting, Billy Godwin's club won 16-3 over Radford. Opening day is finally here. The 11th ranked Pirates taking on the Radford Highlanders out of the Big South. Three game series getting underway at 2 p.m. Game one of the doubleheader. Game two will be approximately 45 minutes after the conclusion of the first. Now we're very excited to be joined by the 12th year head coach of the Radford Highlanders, Joe Rakuya.
Well, it's a very exciting time for a lot of us that love college baseball. And this weekend, East Carolina has a big opponent in Radford. And Bubba, we have a guy that knows a lot about the program, right?
Yeah, we're very excited to be joined by the 12th year head coach of the Radford Highlanders, who will be at Clark LeClaire this weekend. Actually, schedule changed today. There will be a doubleheader tomorrow beginning at 2 p.m. I'm very excited to be joined by the head coach, Joe Rakuya. Joe, welcome into the show.
Guys, thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Coach, for being here. Coach, we wanted to have you on. Obviously, very excited for baseball season to be here. I know you guys are. You've had a lot of time to evaluate talent and actually get into workouts and scrimmages. What's your mindset now going into the 2019 season?
You know, it's no different than any other year. It's anticipation. We're excited. You know, and you got a bunch of guys that I think are very talented, but I've had lesser talented teams that have won a lot of games and more talented teams that, you know, that have lost a lot of games. So I think it's just a matter of, as the season goes on, what guys can fill what roles and what we can count on. And typically that takes about the first 15 games or so, and then you start to figure out, okay, maybe we anticipate this guy being good out of the pen, and he's not. But, you know, so we're going into this with an open mind. We've got some guys that we think are going to fill some roles, but those things will be ever-changing. But we're talented, so it makes us pretty excited.
Coach, I wanted to ask you, a guy that I noticed he led you essentially in almost every offensive category a season ago, junior first baseman Spencer Horwitz. Can you talk a little bit about him?
Yeah, Spencer's been here. He's in his third year. He's a draft eligible junior. He's a guy that was all conference in his freshman year, put up really good numbers. I think last year also was all conference. Has a chance to have power potential, average, not a lot of strikeouts. Just a guy that, you know, we're going to move to left field. But we count on him to be one of our top two or three guys. And he'll hit in the middle of the order, get a chance to produce some runs. And, you know, anytime you typically face a lot of right-handed pitching in college baseball, but ECU starting two lefties. But, you know, so that's good for him that he, you know, in college baseball, you get to face a lot of right-handed pitching. When you can load up on left-handed bats, that's obviously important.
Coach, in addition to Spencer, can you talk a little bit about, I noticed also outfielder, he's a senior, Andrew Zamsky.
Yeah, we've got a guy, our middle lineups has a chance to be really offensive. And, you know, all it takes is two guys that bad year to not be very offensive. But we have some power potential in there, Zamsky being one of them. A guy that came off of having a really good year and then getting hurt about halfway through the year. And it was leading every category in the Big South at that time. So with Horwitz and Zamsky, a solid right fielder, middle of the order right-handed bat, and with the transfer of Mundy, the left-handed bat from Virginia Tech, I think those three have potential to really help us do some damage in the middle of the order.
Coach, I wanted to ask about your lefty, Hunter Williams. Can you talk about him?
Yeah, Hunter's a, you know, sophomore guy that's come back after his freshman year. You know, he had up and down freshman year, but more importantly, he threw about 60 innings or so. So, you know, he grew up. He was better later in the year. He's a guy that competes. You know, a guy with the upper 80s fastball with a pretty good feel for changeup and breaking ball. And, you know, we expect to step up from last year in regards to not having to go deep into counts. Deep, you know, he's had the ability to – he's shown that he was – you know, he was always going deep into at-bats, 3-2 counts, 3-1 counts, 2-3 counts, and now finishing at-bats in the first three pitches. It's something that we need him to change for him to be able to carry into the sixth and seventh innings of baseball games. And if we can do that, then that's the next step for him.
I wanted to ask about one thing that I love pitching, so that's maybe I'm a pitching nerd, but wanted to ask about one question. It seems like across the board, even in Major League Baseball, baseball period, relief pitching is always a big question mark, it seems like, for teams. How is the relief pitching this year for you guys?
Well, that's a funny thing you asked. That's my biggest fear right now. And, you know, but we went into 15 with a really good closer, but really didn't know what we were going to do in the setup roles to bridge the gap between the starters and the closers. And I feel the same way this year. I feel like we've got some decent frontline starting pitching. I feel like we've got a closer in Hickerson, our shortstop, that is really good, talented. It's the matter of who can pitch consistently two or three times on the week to bridge the gap from the sixth to the eighth innings. Those are the most vital innings of a baseball game. They're won and lost right there. And just being in a position to get the baseball to the closer in a good situation. So when you ask about that, I don't know. There's a bunch of candidates. We're excited about some of them, but a lot of inexperienced guys in that regard.
And I know that one of the issues, obviously, with any team is coming in on the road. I know East Carolina's had trouble with that in the past. How do you guys feel about coming into number 11, East Carolina, to Clark LeClair Stadium this weekend?
Well, guys, let me first talk about this at first. Personally, I'm driving into a stadium that is named after Keith LeClair. And I was an assistant coach at George Mason and then the CAA, and had a really strong relationship with Keith, even through all the days of his sickness. And the last time I had been there, Keith was the baseball coach at East Carolina. So even though I've been at Raptors for 12 years and have not played at, been to the stadium, and have not played there. Last time I coached there, Chris Godwin was in the lineup with Joe Hastings and Ted Tracy and Delfino and Nick Schnabel, you name it, which is probably one of the better offenses I've ever laid eyes on. So it's interesting to go back. Cliff is a good friend of mine. Jeff Palumbo, his assistant, is my first recruit ever at George Mason. So there's some really strong ties there. And, but I remember the old days of the bleacher seats and the jungle being relentless. So anytime you go into a place that's referred to as the jungle, and they're 11th in the country, I think you've got your hands, you get your work cut out for you.
You were talking about Coach LeClair. What are your thoughts on him? We're doing a special podcast coming up in a couple weeks. What are your thoughts on Coach LeClair? Can you just enlighten us a little bit?
Keith was just this quiet, wonderful guy that really ran a great program, did a great job in recruiting and developing his players. They loved him. And, the one story that I can tell you is when I became the head coach at Marist College in 2003, about 3 or 4 days prior to the season beginning, it was my first job as a head coach, and I emailed Coach LeClair and asked him for advice. And at that time, he was not capable of calling, talking, typing. This is when he was doing the laser with his eyes. He was sending emails back, on his computer screen. And a lot of things he wrote back in that email was just very humbling about how to slow the game down and how to enjoy it and things to that nature of that I'm going to have a headache by the fifth inning. It's never going to go so fast. And just learn how to slow it all down, enjoy it, take care of the players. It was a pretty neat email that I received a few days before opening day.
Oh, that's very special and a special guy. Let's talk about 2019 for you guys. As far as we know, obviously East Carolina is non-conference, but Can you talk a little bit about some of your non-conference games that you have coming up this season for fans?
Yeah, we're obviously open up ECU, top 15 in the country preseason. Then we travel to the Wofford tournament that has ECU, Pitt, and Wofford in it, then UAB. Then we're home against Harvard. We have a bye weekend in early May against North Carolina State. Wake Forest is coming to Radford. We're playing at Virginia. We have Virginia Tech. I think we have Pitt for a game. It's a pretty challenging schedule. And we wouldn't have it any other way besides our conference 24, 27 game set. I forget what that is, but we wouldn't have it any other way. We're just excited about it. We want to play a nice facility against good competition and obviously see that if we can hold our own and we can do what I think we're capable of doing, I want to put us in a position at the end of the year like we were in 15 to be an at-large team.
Coach, I wanted to ask you, it seems like a common theme. We had a preview for the coaches around the state of North Carolina. Of course, Cliff Godwin is coaching at his alma mater. You're coaching at your alma mater. How special is that? Is it more pressure you put on yourself, or do you feel more comfortable being there? It's kind of like home, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of home. I only went here for 2 years, but yeah, I mean, it's back home. I'm, you know, obviously familiar with the university, familiar with the area. I think it puts more pressure on with alumni, to be quite honest with you, because they're your teammates and guys that you've coached. And so now when you add in the fact that I know all the older guys that have graduated in the 80s and early 90s in that program, and then all the guys that I've coached, they have access to you 24/7 with that cell phone and text messages. So I think it's a little more pressure from that standpoint, because they're liable to ask any questions or ask why I pitched hit or did anything throughout the course of a game. What's wrong with this player or what have you? But I don't treat it any different. You know, it's special to win here. It really is. You know, take the team to the first NCAA tournament that they ever did and championships two out of the last 4 years. Those things are special because they've never been done here before.
Can you talk a little bit about the time we have left? I know that's a tough question to ask, answer in a couple minutes, but how do you build a program from scratch for people listening right now? How did you do it at Radford?
Well, in 2007, you build it with a lot of hard work and some toughness, and changing the culture around. Probably not the way you can do it in 2019. Might be fired if I did it now. But you know what? You get alumni involved. You get the community involved. You reach out to anybody that has an interest in helping college baseball and has a passion for it. And anybody you touch can help in any facet, whether it's time, resource, money. You know, and then you look up, and 5 years later, you have a stadium. You know, 4 years later, you have a new facility with lights. You have a new indoor facility. You have a video board. All those type of things are started from the ground up. You just have to grassroot it. You have to meet people. You have to go recruit everybody. You have to bring visits on campus. And then you have to, you have to sell the vision to kids in your program. About how things are changing, and we are going to treat you the right way, give you the right facilities, give you the right equipment, and put the right logos on things so, you know, we can go out and travel and look the part. But I think kids just wanted us to care about them and provide our hard work and player development, and everything else falls in place.
Well, Coach, unfortunately, you're having to deal with North Carolina weather. I understand. I just got word a little while ago that there's going to be a doubleheader for Friday, and then I guess it'll be a day off for Saturday and then a game on Sunday or something like that. So good luck to you guys this weekend, and good luck to you in 2019. I appreciate the visit, and hopefully you'll come back on the Sports Objective.
You call me anytime, fellas. I appreciate your support of college baseball, and thank you for the time.
Now we're going to catch up with someone who's certainly no stranger to Pirate Nation. He's been around the ECU program for a half century between his time as a student, assistant coach, head coach, and now an athletics administrator. He'll be alongside Pirate IMG play-by-play man Corey Glore this weekend, serving as the color analyst. And I'm, of course, talking about ECU Hall of Famer Coach Gary Overton. Let's go to that interview now.
Very excited to have our next guest. We're honored to have former ECU baseball coach Gary Overton. Coach, thank you so much for coming on with us.
Well, it's certainly good to be here, and very good to talk baseball with you guys in this early season.
It's hard to believe. I know that the weather's more like, Coach, the weather's more like baseball season now than the normal February, right?
We all like to say that we should be playing now, but coaches like to say we can get some good work in at this time.
We wanted to have you on with Coach Cliff Godwin, and hard to believe the season's here. It's only about a week away. What are your thoughts here in preseason before the season starts on the 2019 campaign?
Well, certainly college baseball has made leaps and bounds over the years, but along with it, so has East Carolina. And the job that Cliff Godwin has done has just been phenomenal. High expectations coming into this year for ECU with a lot of returning talent. And it's a season that the Pirate fans are certainly looking forward to. And, again, those high expectations can create some very good baseball within itself.
Coach, you referenced the immense amount of talent that we have on our current roster, and I certainly don't mean this disrespectfully to any of our baseball letter winners, because we certainly had unbelievable amount of talent down through the years. But would you say from top to bottom that this is probably the most talented roster that ECU baseball has ever had?
I really feel there's almost no question that that's the case. And I go back to reiterate your comments. You're exactly right. There's been a very rich tradition with East Carolina baseball dating back many, many years. With a lot of good players over those years, and many players who have gone on to the next level. But when you look at the depth that's incorporated in this particular club, I think it probably has to reach the point where, as you said, it's second to none. There are players that are expected to go very high in the draft. No question about that. And multiple players as well. So the quantity is there, but the quality that for lack of a better term, backs up these particular players is really, really exceptional. And Cliff Godwin can turn to the next guy, whether you use the term next guy up, whatever. It certainly is a team of depth and talent.
One of the things, Coach, I've noticed is the one key for me is pitching. It's something that's very important to me. When I look top to bottom at the roster with the pitchers, not only starting pitching but relief pitching, it's probably the strongest that Cliff's ever had, don't you think?
Oh, yes. The four pitchers that are getting the most accolades at this particular point are Jake Agnos and Trey Benton. Two guys that have very high upsides. They're both juniors who look to fulfill a starting role, but not to be mentioned, not to be overlooked, are the numbers that two other guys, Tyler Smith and Alec Burleson, have posted. And these are guys that not only can surface into maybe the leading role, but any of those four are very quality. Now, when you mention four rather than two or even three, one has to think of the midweek pitching the Pirates can put on the field when they face a very formidable opponent.
You mentioned the midweek pitching, Coach. This is Kyle, by the way. Talk a little bit about what you think of our non-conference schedule this year, both midweek and weekend. We got some tough road series, non-conference.
Kyle, you're so right. This is a very tough schedule. There's no question about that. And many of the tougher games do come on the road. Now, that's certainly an RPI booster for the Pirates, who are hopefully looking to host either a regional and or super regional this year. It's certainly what the Pirates feel like are necessary to take a step to Omaha, somewhere that we haven't been. Yet at the same time, UCLA very highly ranked. North Carolina, we know from around here that they have they've been the bell cow, so to speak, in terms of rankings for the last few years, and they've made their numerous trips to Omaha. But then you throw in Mississippi or Ole Miss, Mississippi State. You're looking at opponents there that not only are nationally acclaimed, but these are people that the Pirates would really welcome some wins. Tough to do at home, much less on the road, but all of those games or all of those teams the Pirates do play on the road.
Coach, you're well respected in the baseball community. Can you talk about Coach Cliff Godwin and your thoughts on him and what others in the baseball community think about him?
Well, I think what others think about him are equal to my thoughts as well, and that is he's an outstanding baseball coach. But at the same time, Cliff came in here with a wealth of experience as an assistant at other programs and many of those marquee programs. But let's not forget that he was a player, and I think any coach would tell you very much a self-made player here at East Carolina. He developed from the day that he walked on campus. He is very tough, gritty, so to speak, and he's a hard-nosed coach who likes to win unlike any other, one might say. But what he's brought to East Carolina since he's been the head coach, he has developed a very strong culture and a bond with his players. He is so highly respected within the framework of our program, not just this particular team, but teams of the past as well. And he takes that, again, has built through recruiting the quality depth that we spoke of earlier. And he has made this program not just a national one, but one that's very capable of making its first trip to the College World Series.
That's one thing, Coach, I wanted to mention is that the one stat that I'm tired of hearing about is 29 regionals and no appearances in Omaha. Do you think the team has do you think this team is capable of going at least to the College World Series? It'd be nice to say we won it one day, but do you think we can at least punch our ticket to Omaha?
Well, let's go back and first of all mention the 29 regionals that you spoke of. I think that speaks to the tradition of this program, and Cliff Godwin would be the first to tell you that history and tradition has a lot to do. What was it sportscasters used to say years ago? That's something that you can't cut, you can't slice. It's always there, whether you want it there or not. It's always there, and that's a fact in which programs can and do become built to a higher level. As to this particular team, I'll answer your question by saying yes. I've seen many of the programs across the country, or many teams over the last few years that I felt were really good clubs, and carried two, three pretty good pitchers and a closer, six to seven position players that were of high quality. And of course, we all know that when teams win national championships, I'll use an example, Florida of recent times, with a very loaded roster. And there are programs like that. Well, I'm sorry, there are teams like that. But this particular East Carolina team, 1 through 9, will be a force. And I think we all know that power is certainly one element of the offense that's going to be a characteristic of this club. And then we mentioned the depth of the pitching staff. So 1 through 9, regardless of who's in the lineup, is going to be tough outs. And at the same time, pitching, especially starting pitching, But then as the bullpen, for lack of a better word, unloads, or as they come out of the pen, regardless of the role, there is certainly enough quality there not to just get to Omaha, but to make a lot of points there.
Coach, we certainly wanted to spend the majority of this time talking about the current club, but anyone who knows East Carolina baseball knows your track record. I mean, you have nearly, what, 5 decades spent at East Carolina University from your time as a student, and then also your time, I think, did you get your start on Hal Baird's staff, or was it even before then?
It was on Hal Baird's staff. I was the assistant with him.
Okay, so Hal Baird, obviously a tremendous coach in his own right, went on to Auburn and also served as an athletic administrator there. But you had 13 years. You became the program's all-time winningest coach with nearly 430 victories. So talk a little bit about your experience as both an assistant and a head coach at ECU, and then also after coaching, just serving as an athletic administrator and what you've had the opportunity to do serving on the NCAA Division I Baseball Committee, and then as a regional site director.
Yeah, well, thanks for those very kind words. Been very honored and privileged. Each of those roles that you just mentioned, very special in every way imaginable. As a start under Hal Baird, I worked under one of the best coaches that I think has coached college baseball. Certainly a gentleman that took two Auburn teams to the College World Series. And when he was at East Carolina, not only sustained the history and tradition of the program at that time, but carried it a step further and learned a great deal under Coach Baird, worked with a gentleman that I consider a very close friend to this day. And as you said, he became an athletic administrator. And then as the head coach, want to credit the players. All-American Winfred Johnson back in the 80s, and then the 1990 team that you guys will remember as being students back in that day. We actually led the country in winning percentage that year, finishing 47-9. And a lot of talent on that club as well as this particular year. But being able to be around guys like that and to coach with those individuals, but also, again, I go back to the tradition of East Carolina. That was what was so special about being here. And then moving on into athletic administration, Terry Holland asked me to come on board with him and his staff. And that was a pleasure and something that I had looked forward to possibly doing upon leaving the coaching ranks. And it has been very rewarding since that time. As far as the NCAA, I have served on several committees with the NCAA. And it has been, I wouldn't call that rewarding. I would say that's very enriching, learning the process. But the fact that they tapped me to lend some expertise in baseball was certainly an honor. You mentioned the committees. I did serve on the NCAA Division I committee, which, of course, is the selection committee, for 4 years. And the people that you meet and the people that you're surrounded with on a baseball basis is very remarkable. And it kind of – it lends a national credence, so to speak, to not just to myself, but to East Carolina and to all that are involved in this particular program. Being a site rep, yes, I received that call back in 2004. And since that particular year, I've been sent out to work NCAA regionals and super regionals at various sites. And having the opportunity to watch and see other programs, I think the enlightenment there is seeing just how good and how elevated East Carolina's baseball program is compared to many others. When you talk about national programs, from what I've seen being out in the field, having those responsibilities, I'd have to say East Carolina is as national as any other program.
And Coach O, one other thing I had, I know when it comes to the NCAA format, shortly after you got out of coaching, it went from 48 teams, and then you had your 8 6-team regionals. So in 99, we transitioned to the current format where you have 16 four-team regionals and then the super regional round before you go to Omaha. So talk about that. You certainly participated in many of the old format. How do you think the two compare?
Well, twofold. First and foremost, being 48 teams back then versus 64, it was a little tougher to get in. And there were many one-bid leagues of which we were a part of, although East Carolina did get an occasional at-large bid. Also, the larger conferences at that particular time had less representation into the field due to the 48 versus 64. So it was a little harder to get in. Now, really, really tough to win a 16 regional. And the difference was in a 16 regional, teams 1 through 4 were not only strong, but 3 of those 4 were exceptionally strong. Generally, 2 of the clubs, maybe not quite as, not quite the foe that was, needed to win and to advance onto the College World Series, but 16 regionals were really tough. But once a regional was won, obviously they immediately went to the College World Series. I think today's format is more fair, and what I mean by that is 14 regionals with quality pitching doesn't take quite as much depth, but the better the quality, the more chance for the advancement, thus being more fair and more just as to who does advance. And then after advancing past the regional round, super regionals, 2 out of 3, that speaks for itself. So it takes 2 rounds, but there's a little more rest in between, and it takes a little less depth, but a little more quality. So I think the format today is more fair and more just than the old format, but it's also a little easier, just a little, to get into the field than it was back in those days.
Hey, Coach, I had a question for you. Maybe you can help me understand, and maybe speaking of regional, but one of the things that the guys we talked about last year with us hosting a regional is we love Coach Scaff and Wilmington, but they ended up getting a 4 seed in our regional. Is that because of the actual region being there in Wilmington and it's Greenville? We know it's very difficult to beat a team multiple times, especially as good as Wilmington is. Is that something that they picked, or is that, do you think that's fair that they picked Wilmington there, or how does that all work?
Very good question. Excellent. It starts in this manner. Each team, once the 64 teams are selected, and of course we know that there are automatic berths due to conference champions, but once that and the at-large field is selected, then each team is seeded. And I would like to say, it's not quite this easy, but it's very close. I'd like to say that they're seeded by way of RPI. The ones are the, it's not a matter that the ones are the higher RPIs, that's a given. But after a certain number, there could be a little discrepancy. But in general, each team is given the 1 through 4 seed. And Wilmington did draw that 4 seed this past year due to their RPI. They, although they had a good year, a very good year, I think they had a lack of quality wins. The fact that ECU swept them, a number of good teams did have some sweeps over the Seahawks, but at the same time, the Seahawks with a lot of wins and, of course, advancing into the field. But they did get the 4 seed. After that, then a formula is used, and here's the formula. The first, they take the, they try to seed the teams somewhat by geography, but also with fairness. But then a formula where seeds 1, 2, and 3, their RPI is put in a pool, averaged, and they try to make every regional to equal the same number or the same average or very close to the same average. A 4 is left out of that because there's such a discrepancy. And here's what the question you're asking. A UNC Wilmington, who is a 4 seed, is considered an excellent 4 seed. One,
right.
One who can possibly win that particular regional, where I'm sure it's probably not fair on the air that I call a name, but maybe the champion of a conference who is one of the lesser RPI conferences.
Right.
Maybe the champion of the MEAC, or maybe the champion of the SWAC, or maybe the champion of the Mid-American, possibly. Any of those could have a very, very poor RPI with such a discrepancy that 4 seeds are left out. So Wilmington is a team that could win a regional where, again, someone from say, the MEAC or the MAC or the SWAC is really not a threat to win a regional. So that would skew the average. Therefore, the 1 through 3 seeds are averaged, and they're balanced accordingly.
Okay. That's what I was – I've been – the whole off season has just bothered me. So I was just curious of how that all – I guess I'm a nerd when it comes to tournaments and things like that. I've never heard that explained. So thank you for – on that. As far as we had Mike Rooney on from ESPN and for our college baseball preview, he even said he feels like that East Carolina will get one of the top 8 seeds. Do you think that's fair?
Very fair to think. Absolutely. Now, that's a tall order. And Mike, who I've met on several occasions, a great guy, by the way, and I'm sure you guys know that from having interviewed him. But very fair statement. I think the Pirates have to be considered when you're preseason or early season looking at who the top 8 may be. Now, for ECU to do that, one of the factors, they're going to have to win a number of those road games we discussed earlier. And that's going to – those, again, are RPI boosters. But to think at this particular point that the Pirates could be in the top 8, absolutely, yes.
Coach, two quick questions for me before we start to wrap this thing up. I keep talking about the NCAA tournament there. What do you think about the new seeding format that they started last year with seeding everybody 1 through 16 and not playing your super regionals based on geography, but based on seeding, which I like that a lot. And second was I just wanted to talk about your broadcasting career and how you like working with Corey Glory.
Yes. As far as the seeding 1 through 16, when I was on the committee and I went off in 13, went on in 09, went off in 13, when I was on the committee, we actually hashed that around a little, but it never really got much traction. And the fact that it was started last year was for the betterment of baseball, as you guys said. And you hit that spot on. The purpose behind that was to not use geography, but to use seeds as a not just a comparison of teams or a competition of the two teams, but also as to the where those teams would play, and so yeah, it's much better and it's more fair for the game, which is what I think all have tried to do for quite some time. We keep making the game better as we go. As for my broadcasting career, Jeff Charles, our play-by-play guy, asked me to come on board in 04. Was the first year I started. Enjoyed it so much back in those days. And each year thereafter, it's been very special. To work with Corey Glore is outstanding. I don't think I've worked with a young man, a newcomer, so to speak. I say that he's not a newcomer to broadcasting by any means, but certainly young and has a great career in front of him. But to see the planning and the preparation that he puts into and the research that he does prior to each broadcast is certainly remarkable, and accolades to him for being as good as he is, but there are reasons why he is so good too. He works at the game exceptionally well. Corey's a guy that coaches would love to have had played for them with his work ethic.
That's going to be interesting to see as the season starts, hard to believe, in a week. And we're going to have a lot of fun as the Radford's on the clock. And, Coach, thank you so much for your time. You're one of our bucket list people we wanted to have on the podcast, and hopefully we can have you back on again in season.
Guys, it's been a pleasure.
The Pirate pitching staff is the best it's been in quite some time, and now we're going to catch up with a guy who appeared in more games as an ECU pitcher than any other pitcher in the program's history, and he's number two on the career saves list. Let's go to our interview with Seth Simmons right now.
We're doing our ECU baseball preview. Pirates open up this week against, hard to believe, on Friday against Radford. And Bubba, we have a very special guest. Very excited.
Yeah, and we have a guy with us. He's appeared in more games, or he did appear in more games, I should say, than any other pitcher in East Carolina history, 117. He ranks second all-time in career saves. Very excited to have with us Seth Simmons. Seth, welcome into the show.
Welcome,
Thanks,
Seth.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We want to talk about your career at ECU and obviously what you're up to now. And I know you played under Billy Godwin. Can you talk about how you came to ECU and why did you choose to become a Pirate?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's a funny story. I think Bubba knows a little bit of the background. When I was getting recruited, it was kind of like I wouldn't say late bloomer, but not many people knew who I was. I transferred high school, so I didn't get into the, like, showcase and get myself out there all that quickly like some of the other players do. And now it's even, I think, more crazy with the way the guys get signed and committed so early now. But originally I committed to NC State, and then they hired Tom Holliday. Me and him didn't see eye to eye. I got my NLI back, and I immediately started calling all the coaches that I had good relationships with. Actually, it was probably my own fault. I probably committed just a little too early. I didn't really give ECU a chance to give me, like, a fair offer. I got my first ACC offer, saw the bright lights of the ACC, and jumped in on it, and, you know, it came back to bite me. But, you know, when I talked to Coach Godwin after all that went down, he said, you know, I'll offer you what I was planning on offering you your sophomore year, as long as you do everything that you're supposed to in the classroom, on the field, that has nothing to do with your performance, you will get that offer your sophomore year. And, you know, I sat with my parents. And I said, he's been the most honest, I think, the whole time. He's never offered me a Friday night spot. He's never offered me the closing spot. He never said I was even going to pitch. He said, you're going to work for what you get, but I will stick to my word and offer what I said I was going to your sophomore year. I just don't have it because you committed somewhere else your freshman year. And I said, that's fine with me. Let's do it. So I actually paid my own way my freshman year and, you know, pitched well enough to get a little bit more than what he offered. So he stuck to his word and then some. So actually, it's probably a blessing in disguise. Everything works out for a reason. I wouldn't change it for the world. The only thing I probably wish I could change was I probably accepted their first offer. So, again, I loved every second of being at ECU. It was some of the best. It's probably the best 4 years I could ever imagine. So the fans were great. You know, I had a great time at ECU. So I can't regret a single thing that happened.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to mention one thing too. Is you were part of that 2009 team, that special team? I know that had a very big time season too.
Oh yeah, it was. That was a ton of fun, and I think everything just came together. You know, we had all the freshmen from the year before. Me, Manish, Mincy, and those guys. You know, I think having all the playing time that we did and still being successful. I mean, our freshman year was pretty successful because we had a lot of young guys step up early, and we made it to a regional and
yeah.
a championship, you know. And some of us have never been in a situation like that, so it was good to get that experience. But going into my sophomore year, I think the whole team just had so much confidence, and we didn't really care what the country thought about us. We knew what we were capable of. So.
Yeah, what I was going to ask is, obviously you pitched from 2008 to 2011. And Dave read my mind asking about the 2009 team. So more specifically, that year, I think you appeared in something like 33 games in a variety of relief roles, not only as a closer, but middle leaf, short leaf. And with that being the case, just taking a look at that regional specifically, talk a little bit about that. We kind of got behind the eight ball losing to South Carolina in, I guess, game two after winning our opener, and then had to battle back winning three in a row. Just talk a little bit about the mindset of the team and that process of winning three straight games, two of them over South Carolina, and then, of course, that game on Monday night where Devin Harris produced the two big hits.
Yeah, I think going into the regional, we knew who we were up against, so it wasn't really like we were worried about it. I think what really happened was that whole rainout where we had to play two games in one day and South Carolina was completely rested. I think that's just what really got us was, you know, we sat at the field all night ready to play. That didn't happen, had to be back during the day, play in the heat, and then turn around and play again and play South Carolina. I mean, that wasn't easy. And they were rested, and they had their you know, their arms ready. I mean, it's different when, you know, you got a guy like Seth Maness ready to go that night or what have you, and then he can't go, and he's got to turn around, go through his whole process again. And that's everybody, like the 1 through 9 on the starting lineup. So we kind of knew that going in. But when we lost that first game, I don't remember being in the locker room going, hey, man, we're in trouble. I just remember going, we are really good hitting-wise. We had one night where we didn't throw the ball that well. And then the rest of the weekend, you know, we had maybe one or two innings where we didn't throw very well against South Carolina in that championship game. But other than that, our entire pitching staff stepped up, the hitters stepped up, our defense stepped up. And we always felt, and like Coach Godwin said it and Coach Jared always said it, we're always within striking distance in one inning because of how well that team hit. And we believed it. I mean, we knew that all it took was maybe two hits, and for us, hitting was contagious that year. A couple hits, and the guys started rolling them off one after the other, and y'all saw that. And then, you know, Devin coming up in those two big situations, even Roller, people like, I don't think they forget about it, but Roller getting that hit and getting on second base for Devin was huge. That was like the biggest. I know Devin hitting that 3-run home run was huge, but Roller getting that hit to put us in position to win the ball game was big. I think I threw something like 4 or 5 innings out of the pen that night. So I was gassed because I'd pitched the night before I closed that game against South Carolina. And then so I was gassed. I think our whole team was gassed, but we just kept fighting. And you saw it. I mean, we never gave up. We just kept going and going and going. We knew that we were always – we knew we were always right there. We knew they weren't we knew they were a good team, but we knew they weren't better than us.
Right. Yeah. I was like, and just like you were saying, when it was 9-6 going into the bottom of the ninth, and you just had a kind of a funny feeling just the way that team could hit, that it was going to happen. And then sure enough, it did. I remember I was standing directly behind the plate when Devin hit that 3-run bomb. And it certainly was that, well over the berm in left center field. And so it's certainly unbelievable memories. And I was standing beside your dad when it happened. And so everybody was high-fiving each other, and the stadium was nuts.
Yeah, that was so much fun. I mean, I remember pitching in that game really because everything was just going so fast, and I just kept saying, you know, one out at a time, one out at a time. I think Jackie Bradley got me that made it 9-6, and it was like solo or maybe a 2-run homer because we were only down maybe 1 or 2 runs before I gave up that home run. Again, like I said, I remember Ray Tanner saying when I came in this post game saying that the changeup that I threw was keeping the guys off balance, and I always laugh and I always talk to Witt about it all the time. I was like, I didn't throw a single changeup that game. I was just gassed. I mean, we were all running on fumes, and you know, the hitters stepped up, our defense stepped up, and you know, and people forget this, that was the emergence of Mike Wright. If y'all remember when he came in, he was throwing absolute BBs absolute BBs that game. And then, you know, the rest of his career, we saw what he was able to do, and now he's in the big league. So for me, that was like the real emergence of Mike Wright. And he became, you know, one of the best starters that year after, and the year after that. I mean, so that was huge, him coming in, and Devin and Roller and everybody. I mean, that whole game was just – I always remember that game. And it's funny, I come back to ECU. I came back this year, and people still just want to ask that question. I'm like, I love it. I absolutely love it. I love reminiscing on that game. It's probably, in my opinion, it's probably my best memory of a game at ECU. Of all the stats, the day I broke the saves record, I remember that. And it'll always – I still have the ball from where I saved it. But the game that sticks out the most is that game. And while I pitched pretty well, I wasn't, like, the biggest point of that game. So, but to me, just as a team and everything that we accomplished and everything we went through the offseason, the whole season, who we played, that was just – to me, that's the game that sticks out the most.
Seth, I want to ask you, as far as when it comes to – pitching, and when it comes to pitching in a regional, is it do you try to have the same mindset of what you would, like, okay, this is a every ordinary thing, but I know you're human. I mean, is it more pressure you put on yourself, is what I'm trying to ask, when it comes to pitching in a regular season game versus pitching in the postseason?
I think there is more pressure, obviously, because everything's heightened. It's win or go home. But
right.
What ECU, the fans, do really, really well is they prepare us for that. You know, we played Chapel Hill that year during the midweek, and there was
more
fans for that game as there was for the South Carolina championship game. So doing that, and then, you know, you play Rice and those teams like that, and so that does prepare us. But, yes, it is a little bit of a heightened sense of, I don't know if you say pressure, but more of like adrenaline, I guess. And you have to learn how to harness that and control that and use it. You don't ever want to fight against adrenaline, but you got to learn how to use it. I think that's the biggest key, is you get into this pattern of the same adrenaline each time you go out, and then it's a little more heightened because you know it's win or go home. And you just have to learn how to control that adrenaline, and I think our coaching staff did a really good job of preparing each player that was going to play in that game that there is going to be added adrenaline, but use it and have fun with it. And I think that's what we did. So I think it's actually helped me. That game itself has helped me so much more in my career than any other game, because it's like, we got through that. I can get through anything. So that, I mean, but again, like, I think our fans do a great job of preparing us for situations like that, because not a lot of teams get to play in front of that all the time. So when you come into ECU and you come into, you know, Clark LeClaire, it's a real situation. We you know, our fans bring it, we bring it, the whole community brings it. Like, I talk to guys all the time that talk about, when we played y'all, man, that was so much fun, but we had never played in front of something like that. And I'm like, that's what prepared me for, I think, continuing my career. I can get through anything because of how you guys prepare the players to play in front of crowds like that and use the adrenaline and use it against other teams.
So, Seth, after you finished your career in the spring of 11, you were drafted in the 40th round by the D-backs. And in that fall, you played, or I guess summer and fall, you played rookie ball in Missoula. So, and then next 3 years, you played in high A ball. And then ever since, that's what you were either in double or triple A, depending on the year, or like split throughout the year. So talk a little bit about your professional career.
Early on, rookie ball, that was a tough little transition because you don't have somebody, you know, walking you through each step. It's more about being a man and growing up and being more accountable for yourself. But again, ECU and Coach Godwin and Jarrett and Coach Roselle and even Coach Jarman, that whole 4 years really prepared me for pro baseball. It was a little bit of a rude awakening because now you're playing against grown men all the time that you don't really get a chance to fool anybody anymore. They've seen everything. So it was just about trusting the process and becoming more consistent. And the more consistent I got, the more I trusted myself, I think the better my career has gotten. And that's just kind of what the approach I tried to take in each off season is just try to learn from each year what I do well, what I didn't do well, and then, you know, build off of that. So, you know, I've always just had to fight for everything that I've gotten in pro baseball. Not the biggest guy, don't throw the hardest. But, you know, if you continue to get outs, somebody usually continues to give you a chance. So, you know, that's where I'm at in my career. Still, you know, grinding, still trying to play. But, yeah, I think just, you know, trying to trust the process more. You know, it's not an overnight success thing. There's always something to learn, and there's always a way to get better, whatever it is. So, you know, I've developed more pitches. I've actually stopped walking as many people as I did in college. Actually became a starter when I went with the Padres. So all that process has helped me get to where I'm at in pro ball. And, you know, double A, triple A is tough, but I feel like what the teams that I faced in college helped me get to double A and triple A, because we faced some really, really good teams. I remember telling people some of the best teams I've faced to this day are still college teams.
Right. The right teams that we would face, and UNC, different ones.
Mm-hmm, for sure. You know, the UNC teams that had, like, Dustin Ackley and Kyle Seager, and, you know, they had, you know, Adam Warren, Alex White. I mean, you go down the list of how many big leaguers that they've had on those teams, and you go to Rice with Anthony Rendon, Brock Holt. I mean, it's just – it was incredible, the teams that were put together. And then you look back and go, dang, we had some really good success against those teams. I can do anything in pro ball. So that I think that helped Mike Wright. I think it helped Sean Armstrong. I think it helped Seth Maness. I think it helped everybody, the teams that we faced. Like, playing at ECU, you're not – everybody wants to say, oh, you're not Chapel Hill, you're not NC State and whatnot. But we compete with those teams. We don't just compete, we beat them. And so that process of learning how to – be the quote-unquote underdog and go in and beat those teams and say, I don't care what you think about us, that helps the underdog mentality when you're in pro ball, especially for the guys like that had to really grind through every level of pro ball to get to where they're at now. You know, we were so – I feel like I was so prepared for pro ball coming out of ECU. And that was for me. You know, I was never going to be a guy that's going to be drafted out of high school anyway. But that's what I tell a lot of young guys, too, is you do what you got to do for your family and for whatever you think is best. But some people really do need that process of learning the day-to-day, becoming a man, and becoming accountable for your own, you know, actions and what happens on the field and what happens off the field. And I think it just prepared all of us for the rest of our careers. So I you know, that's just kind of how I take my process into each year is, I always look back on the things I did at ECU and where I can take those into pro ball and what helped me, like, especially off-season training. What I learned at ECU has helped me so much in my off-season training for, you know, each year.
That was one of the questions I had, Seth, is there's different types of being in shape. Can you talk about what you have to do? I know we always joke about the different sports we cover. There is no off-season anymore. What do you do during the quote-unquote off-season to be prepared for the rigorous – I mean, it's a marathon, not a sprint for pro baseball with all the games you guys have to play.
Yeah, so for me, you know, all the analytics now, I try to dive into some deficiencies that I might have, like, through the season, whether it be, you know, how my legs feel or how my arm felt or anything like that. And that's how I train off-season-wise is – trying to clean up some of those deficiencies, whether it be like hip rotation or, you know, you can dive into all sorts of like analytic stuff, but I try to focus on things that I did really well and continue those, but also really, really focus and harness, you know, deficiencies. So for this, like just an example, this off season, you know, I've always messed around with a changeup and two seam, but I never really gave it the attention it deserved. And I spent maybe, I would say 3 months basically throwing those two pitches alone, not even messing with a slider or a four seam until I started facing live hitters here a couple weeks ago. So being able to focus on certain things throughout the off season has really helped. Whereas in college, it's big time developing in the off season, but you got to be prepared, you know, as soon as you come back in January, where I have January and February to keep preparing here. So that's helped, is being able to say, hey, I can do these things in a short period of time, but now that I have 2 extra months, I can harness something else a little more in those, you know, 2 extra months. So that's what I've done this off season. It's really been like doing your homework and watching other guys. So just this off season, like I was talking to Seth Maness the other day on the phone, I legitimately went back and looked at all of his, you know, TrackMan spin rate numbers on how he threw two seams and changeups, and I tried to get the same sort of like spin rotation and you know, horizontal movement on some of those pitches like he threw, and that helped because I know Seth and I know him really well, and I got to watch him pitch. So I went and looked at his numbers, and then I talked to him, you know, every other day about what his thought process was on how to throw these pitches to become better. And then he, you know, he talks to me about how I've done velocity programs, and, you know, we bounce ideas off each other over and over and over again, send each other videos every other day, and, you know, using that kind of stuff, using your resources is big. Your resource is college. It's Coach Rozelle. It's, you know, it's Cliff Godwin. And it's Palumbo. Those are your resources there. When you're out in pro ball, you know, your coaches are with their family in the off season. They're preparing to develop for the spring, so you can talk to them a little bit. But for me, it was about using my resources around me. So Maness was a big resource. Armstrong's a big resource. Mike Wright's a big resource. Coach Rozelle is still a big resource. I threw a pin for him the other day, and I still send him video. So using all of that has helped me prepare for each season. And those are the guys I trust. And now, you know, working out at Baseball Rebellion this year, got a couple Pirates here. Tyler Zupcich was a volunteer assistant at ECU, and then Eric Tyler was a, you know, player at ECU, a good player for a while there. And then, you know, Dave Shinsky's the pitching coach here. So I, you know, bounce ideas off those guys too. It's just using every ounce of knowledge and resource around you to become what you want to become. And you have to be diligent in that, and you have to be willing to, you know, seek out the best possible info that you can and what will help you and what won't. So it's a lot of trial and error. And so through the off seasons, I've been able to do that because you do have a couple extra months, but you have to always revert back to what worked. And a lot of things worked for me in college. So I try not to get too far off that.
Yeah, something I wanted to ask is kind of along the lines of you were talking about wanting to extend your career. For our listeners who may not know, last year you were coming off Tommy John surgery that caused you to miss the entire 2017 season. And then so last year, that's what you had, more than 50 innings, and I think it was something like 18 or 20 appearances in between AA and AAA, San Antonio and El Paso in the Padres organization. And you performed very well, held opponents less than 250 at the plate. So just talk a little bit about where you are right now. I know you're a free agent. I know you can't discuss specifics, but just talk a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so last year, technically, I guess rookie ball was, as far as ERA-wise, wasn't the best. But, you know, you only get 70 games, and the last part of that year was really good. So last year is technically, I guess, the worst year of my career in total. Spent some time on the DL. But, you know, coming off of TJ was more or less the mental process of that was really, really tough. Trusting that your elbow was fine again, and, you know, trusting the process that the people that were handling me knew exactly what they were doing, and they did. You know, I've got a ton of thank you to the Padres for taking care of me. I mean, not many people get to sign a 2-year minor league deal, and they signed me to a 2-year minor league deal after the fact that they knew I was going to have Tommy John. And, you know, they stuck by me. Last year was just a tough year. It was just up and down. You know, the arm was, it would respond sometimes and sometimes it wouldn't. So just getting through that process this offseason, my arm has not really felt better since I've had TJ until now, as far as just the process of getting back to where I know what my arm feels like and how it's going to respond and whatnot. So I've gotten through that process. Now it's just about, you know, trying to get an opportunity with the team, and it's tough because, you know, there's still like 150 free agents that are probably going to have jobs that are still out there in limbo. You don't have Bryce Harper or Machado on teams yet. I think they're getting closer. I mean, Dallas Keuchel is officially going to be looking for a big contract. So, you know, it's a waiting process, and it's tough because I feel like I still have some good baseball in front of me, and it's just going to be getting a chance with a team and proving it. And I know that when I go, if I do get a chance, especially in spring training, that I've got to go earn a job. It's not anymore where I was with the Padres or Diamondbacks that I kind of knew that I was going to be playing all season somewhere and trying to make the team I wanted to be on. This time it's going to be making a team, whether it's double A, triple A, or wherever. It's about I have to prove that I am good enough to make a team. So that is the that's the tough part, but I feel like I'm in a really good spot through a live BP. I think it's on Twitter on a flat ground app right now, and that's the hardest I have ever thrown in February. I was I think I hit 92 seven straight times. And last year, my average fastball was maybe 89, so 89-90. So the process has definitely worked, and it was just trusting it and knowing that it wasn't going to happen overnight. And, you know, trying to build off that and just hopefully somebody will give me an opportunity. And so far in my career, I felt like if anybody gives me a chance, I've always proved them right, I feel like. The people that have given me a chance, I've just always done my due diligence to make sure I prove that person right. Instead of proving it for myself, I feel like I owe a great deal to people that give me a chance to make sure I prove them right. So that's how I take that into the season. It's not just about doing it for me. It's like the guy that gave me a chance, I want to make sure that guy looks good. So that's kind of my process right now is whoever wants to give me a chance, hopefully it's an affiliated team. If it's not, I'm going to try and maybe look at the indie ball route or something like that and try to get back in baseball. But I feel like I've got a lot of good baseball still ahead of me. And I'm just hoping I get a chance to prove that what I did this off season and how hard I've worked and trying to get back onto a team, I can prove somebody right.
Before we let you go, Seth, on Saturday night, Cliff Godwin had the baseball banquet at the new student center. Can't wait to see it myself. I haven't seen it yet, but anyway, a huge thing he unveiled was a $4 million fundraising effort for new locker rooms, new equipment rooms, including a new room for you guys for the pro players coming back. I want to get your thoughts on Coach Godwin and about the overall project, how that will help recruits and you guys coming back as well.
Oh, man, I think that's huge because, you know, I've lived in Winston most – here recently for off seasons, except for last year when I had to do rehab. You know, the first few years back, I was still working out at ECU because, you know, I played for Billy and I played for Coach Rozelle, so it was an easy transition, you know. And I think some of us, especially the older guys, kind of stayed their distance because Cliff was, you know, turning the program over. And I didn't think it was fair to the new players and the new coaches for us to be in there that did not play for Cliff. I think he needed the opportunity to establish his coaching style. And plus, you know, I didn't know a lot of the people back at ECU. Now they've kind of done what Wake Forest, I don't know if anybody's seen Wake Forest, you know, set up. Wake Forest, you know, built their pitching lab and redid all their stadium and all that stuff. But in their locker room, they have a section for ex-pro guys. They have their own lockers for ex-pro guys. I mean, ex-college guys that are now pro guys. And, you know, I thought to myself, I was like, if ECU did something like that, I think you bring back a lot more of the pro guys wanting to work out there, a couple, you know, even if it's for like a week or whatever. And then lo and behold, you know, a few months later after I thought about that, bam, ECU is right on top of it. So I think it's huge, huge, huge for guys coming into the program knowing that, you know, while I work out here, I get to see a pro guy go about his business. And see how he goes about it as, because he's going to be on his own, but at the same time, like for a guy like me, I think it was huge for guys to the other day when I threw a pin in front of Coach Rozelle and mine and his rapport back and forth. It wasn't like, hey, man, I'm a pro guy now, so I'm not listening. I owe a lot to Coach Rozelle because when he came in my senior year, he trusted everything that I had done so far that made me successful and then built upon that and helped me learn how to throw a fastball consistently with conviction and confidence. And so when I go back to Coach Rozelle and talk to him, my ears are open at all times because I think the guy really knows what he's talking about as far as the delivery and, getting the best out of yourself. So I think that's kind of huge for younger guys that are coming to the program, seeing a pro guy that's been in pro ball for almost 9 years come back and still listen to his college coach. So I think that's going to help for recruits, knowing that, hey, man, you got a guy in your bullpen, that pro guy, you know, Armstrong's in the big leagues, Maness has been in the big leagues, Mike Wright's been in the big leagues, and we all still talk to Coach Rozelle. That's going to be huge. And then obviously, you know, the locker room and everything they're doing there, that's just icing on the cake, because, you know, you're no longer competing with the Chapel Hills and the Wake Forest and the NC States because of, you know, lack of, I don't know, facility. We never really had a lack of facility at ECU. That's one of the greatest places to play in the entire country, but now they're just taking it a step above everybody else.
It's going to be fun to see that. And we got whatever, like I told Bubba yesterday when we were recording our podcast, I said, whatever Coach Godwin wants, being Cliff Godwin in this particular case, Coach Godwin gets. So, and I mean that in a good way. He deserves it and all the hard work. And
absolutely.
With your Coach Godwin, Billy Godwin, and now with Coach Cliff Godwin, the two Godwins back-to-back have been fabulous for this program. And I appreciate your time. I appreciate the visit. I know that you've been generous with us with the time, and good luck to you. We're going to keep following your career, and you're always welcome here on the Sports Objective Podcast.
I appreciate you guys for having me. It was a lot of fun, and, you know, I just think that the culture at ECU has always been the same. Once a pirate, always a pirate. You're always welcome back, and especially with open arms. You know, yes, all the fans want to see everybody go to Omaha and win it, but at the same time, I think our fans are really good at understanding what the guys go through and the process and everything. Like I've said, I've always said, I think we have some of the best fans in the entire country, loyal and dedicated. You know, I'm probably getting into it a little too far right here, but I just still always go back to UCLA when they were like top in the country, freezing rain outside, and we had fans everywhere going crazy. That's just a testament to you guys. So I always enjoy my time at ECU, and with anybody that's ever been a pirate, it's like it's truly a family. It really is.
It is, and we appreciate you again. Thank you so much, and let us know if you have any updates. Love to get it out for the fans too. By the way, on where you land this year for playing baseball.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
Hopefully Pirate Nation will come out this weekend and support the team. We'll have a big turnout for the doubleheader Friday against Radford. And whenever we play game three, you know, it's big time college atmosphere out there for baseball. And tell people that maybe don't normally support ECU baseball or watch college baseball in general, but like the game of baseball, to come on out and check out a game this year. We're going to have an elite baseball team out there to watch this year. At least on paper, we're going to be one of the best teams in the country. And I think we have a chance this year to make some new fans with what we're going to have out there on the field. I mean, we should win a lot of ball games this year. It could be a real special season. You know, last year was fun. I think this year could be even better, and maybe this will be the year we make it to Omaha. We have a new podcast series debuting hopefully this Sunday. It's going to be called The Sports Objective Extra Innings. We will be recapping the week that was in ECU baseball and looking back at the weekend series, and as the season goes, looking back at the weekend series and at midweek games. So we're hopefully going to have that out every Sunday night. We eventually want to go live with it and be able to take calls from you guys and Pirate Nation. And that'll be a lot of fun when we can do that. But right now it's going to be pre-recorded like the rest of the podcast. Again, it's going to be called The Sports Objective Extra Innings. And, you know, what do you think, Bubba?
Hopefully the Pirates will take care of business this weekend against Radford, produce the season-opening sweep of the Highlanders, and put the first broom of the year on the sweep pole in left field. We really appreciate you listening to the show, but stay tuned, folks. We have tremendous baseball coverage headed your way throughout the 2019 season. On Sunday, we'll have our first edition of Extra Innings, where we take a look back at the Radford series and what took place between the Pirates and Highlanders. Wherever you listen to our show, give us a 5-star rating. Follow us on social media, at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. like and follow us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As far as other shows we have headed your way, we'll talk to former Pirate football players and friends of the program, Big Ed Watkins and Jeff Carr. After their playing days were through, they had long careers in NASCAR, and we'll talk with them about what it's like to take part in the Super Bowl of NASCAR.
Should be a great series. First pitch again is at 2 o'clock this afternoon at Clark LeClaire Stadium. And we appreciate our great guest, the Radford coach, the head coach, Joe Rakula. And Rakua, and also we had Coach Gary Overton and Seth Simmons. Appreciate them. Appreciate Kyle from LaGrange for all he does for us, and of course Bubba Rosenbaum. And you know what? So we'll see how the season holds out. And don't forget our extra innings. Our next podcast will be on Sunday night for baseball. And we'll do that every Sunday night. We're going to record it, or maybe sometimes live. We'll see how that goes. But extra innings on the Sports Objective will be every Sunday night, a weekly recap of the week of baseball. So that'll be coming a new thing we have for 2019. Again, for all our great guests, Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.